Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, I was excited. You're talking about porcinis, and that's always like the apex of the season, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
There is a porcini gratin that is I love to make with, you know, quickie potato gratins that are kind of like country or a thing that I always end up doing.
Mm-hmm. It's an easy thing to serve at home.
Last time I had porcinis, I overnight roasted the porcinis with fresh thyme. And a little
you
bit of shallot.
You do a lot of overnight roasting.
It's when you can. When you
your oven is busy all the time.
You know what? When you can sleep and get more flavor in your food at the same time.
Why not?
You know I'm a multitasker.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
It's just true.
So overnight you're cooking some porcinis.
And then you save the porcinis. You also have the oil from that pan.
Mm, yeah.
Mm. That's the oil that you go ahead and let the potatoes slices steep in for a little bit. And then go ahead and lay in your slices of mushroom and potatoes.
There you go.
And the gratin.
You know, and you said that word gratin, and I immediately thought of the restaurant in Chateauneuf-du-Pape at the top of the hill by the chateau. Oh my goodness, I always get this. They do a gratin of macaroni and porcini mushrooms, and, you know, I don't know what the cheese is. It's probably Gruyere or something like that, but oh my God, that is so good. And the macaroni's all crunchy on top, and, you know, they bake this hard in the oven, and it's one of the, and you're sitting outside looking across the Rhone Valley, and it couldn't be, and drinking some great wine from Marcoux or someplace.
And don't wear a hat.
What?
Because it's unbelievably windy up
there. Oh, yeah.
It's hard to
bet. Because you're going to lose your hat up there. Oh, I'm like, wait, what? Yeah, it's so windy up there. Well, yeah. You're on the top of a major hill in the middle of a valley area, so a valley floor area. So yeah.
We got to move on to proteins. We got to move on to main dishes. We keep talking about all the veggies.
Can't
we're
wax
excited
poetic
about harvest
over
time.
Porcini mushrooms
sure
anymore.
Probably for the next 45 minutes. Yeah, we don't have that kind of time in the program. So.
Okay, so squab.
Let's talk about squab. Let's talk about the truth about squab.
Mm, you have to cook it medium rare.
One, it's pigeon, but it's not pigeon. It's younger than pigeon. The pigeon you see hopping around War Memorial Plaza
or
something.
Please don't have that. Give them that visual.
It's not the same thing. It's farm raised.
It's amazing.
It's a very different breed, and it's younger than that.
Oh, yeah. They're small.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, ours weigh like... I mean, I think they're 12 ounces or something. Yeah, you know, they're very small birds, and to me it is. You know, the waiters always say, "How do we describe to a guest?" And I say, "Well, you know, you've got kind of." Well, actually, I think you started telling them this, I'm sure, but you know, you think about the birds kind of in order: pheasant, quail, squab. Pheasant being the mildest, you know, probably sweetest, whitest, and then you start to quail, it gets a little more gamey and in a good way and a little bit stronger flavored, and then squab is the bloodiest of all the birds. I'm sorry to put it that way, but it's true.
Well, that amagre to red meat, like essentially red meat or red blood.
Yeah, amagre and squab are pretty similar. Squab still winning with the most flavor, though. I love squab. It is one of my favorite things to eat.
It is tricky to cook because it has less fat.
It's almost no fat, so which is good, too. I mean, people are kind of into that thing. So, with it, that's one of the reasons why you have to cook it medium rare.
That no fat thing.
I don't know. I don't understand it personally, but yes. So I think that might be a positive. So with squab, you want to crisp the skin if you're pan roasting it. Let's say it's deep. We cook half of a bird at a time. You would probably be cooking more than that. But we will put the skin side down in a very hot pan with corn oil in it and put another saute pan on top of it and hold it down. And that's how you really, really crisp up that skin. And then take the top pan off, flip it over, flip the bird over, and sear it on the meat side and finish it in the oven.
The pan you put on top is also a hot pan.
And is clean.
Yeah.
Very, very clean.
Look at you using an old Italian trick.
Oh.
It's alla mattone. It's like it's cooking under a hot stone.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
I knew there was some Italian in me somewhere. The wolf. Yeah. Okay.
And so what do you like to serve with the pigeon? Pigeon, you cook it to about how far?
Medium rare. So, you know, you're crisp on the outside. You've got a nice sear on the meat side. And, I mean, a small pigeon, I mean, that's 4 minutes in the oven. That's nothing. It's no time. It's fast to cook or on the grill. Oh, it's so good grilled, especially if you've got some wood. If you're going to smoke, get a little smoke flavor into the squab.
Oh, with the wood fire.
Ooh, lordy, that's going to be delicious. Or, you know, if you're me, I have renovated my kitchen. And, of course, it was done in the springtime, and I'm dying to use this wood-burning fireplace I have in my new kitchen.
So you're going to tie a squab up by their feet and hang them over the fire?
Oh, you know it. You are not kidding me. Alla Fuselle. There is no question. I am absolutely roasting birds in that fireplace.
Are you going to put a whole porcini in the cavity?
I might. I hadn't thought of that, but yes. I'm just so excited. I can't wait to cook that way. But if you do have a grill outside or, you know, one that you can put wood on, I would highly suggest a little wood smoke for that squab. Well, I love it with cabbage. There's a million different ways. You want something that can stand up to the squab. So, of course, those porcini mushrooms would be good that we were talking about. But I love, like, either, again, I can't help myself. I'm really thinking about my family, I guess. But sauerkraut and squab is super good. But if you want to go a little bit more refined, you could use Napa cabbage, fresh Napa cabbage, julienne it, wash it, julienne it, saute it with a little bit of bacon. I know I just said the word bacon again. Or not. You could put cider vinegar in the pan with it. That would be really good.
I mean, there are a million different... we will have a bacon and pork reference count at the end of this program.
How many times? Well, so I love the idea of the cider vinegar and the cabbage in the pan. Just, you know, cook it down, maybe add a little bit of butter at the end, salt, pepper, and then serve that with a squab. You could serve a stuffing with a squab. Yeah. You could serve potatoes. You could do a gratin with a squab. I could go on and on. Squab is amazing.
Yeah,
go ahead.
For me, the squab, pigeon, it's all about mushrooms. That's all I want. Mm-hmm. The blood is so sweet. And the earthy flavor there, and it also just makes me want wine. I mean, that's the thing. Red wines from Pomerol in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. I mean, Chateau La Conscience, something like that. Or if you want to do anything that's like a sweet and sour sauce in any way, maybe serve it with saba, or maybe there's a little bit of honey on the outside of the pigeon or something like that, and you roast it in your fireplace with the porcinis. Mm-hmm. I want Barolo or Barbaresco with that in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's and something with a little bit of age to it, where it's really developed some perfume.
Yeah, I've realized I have enough rosemary in my yard. I'm going to hang some by my fireplace, and I think that'll be just so, you know, I can just smell all these amazing aromas right now.
It's
going to
smell like the holidays.
Going.
The entire next 3 months while we wait for snow, it will smell like the holidays in your kitchen.
I cannot wait. But yes.
And so besides cooking, I always want to braise things. I mean, that's the thing that autumn makes me want to make soups and makes me want to braise things. And you mentioned that veal farmer that you love. One of the cuts that I love for flavor and also just in texture of the meat when you slow roast it, or if you braise it, but especially slow roasting it, the neck of the veal or the neck of the lamb, it's a little bit complicated to get the meat from the bone. Mm-hmm. But it's
worth the work.
To season it, if you have a very heavy pan, if you season it nicely, and it's actually a piece that does well with a little marinade, there's so much bone to meat ratio that when you cook it, the juice that's in the pan is amazing. I mean, that's something.
Yes,
that,
absolutely.
And you can also slow roast it and reserve it and just literally just like coat it in good oil and cover it for a while. And use the juice that's in that pan to braise something else, to cook beans. One of the other things that, I mean, veal neck and white beans and a little bit of that roasted pumpkin done as a puree would be the best. And speaking of Barolo dishes, I'm just
that
like the
so
best
good.
Autumn, the autumn kind of thing. That's a good place to use your sage again, that lamb.
Well, that and also thinking about kind of this autumn flavor profile, you know, you're thinking cinnamon, allspice, nutmeg, honey maybe.
Pumpkin can do some spices, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That's something that it's funny. People, when they get, always think pumpkin pie, and everyone, for years and years in restaurants, people would cheat and just use butternut squash in place of the pumpkin because it's just sweeter and they're easier to work with, and it would make me crazy. And then somewhere in the last like 8-10 years, we've gotten farmers who are growing all these different pumpkins that actually are fantastic. There is a pumpkin that does not look like a pumpkin. That has maybe, it's funny, and it's one of the guys from Mexico who we work with, that Mario Cano Catalan, who was the guy who was like, that is the best squash in the world.
Yes.
And it's this big green banana pumpkin. I mean, the thing weighs, sometimes they weigh 40, 50, 60 pounds.
Wow, okay.
We roasted one a couple years ago on the wood oven. And oh
amazing.
My God. And just served slices almost like a pizza.
That's great.
With bacon on it. And
are we getting those now or no?
Not yet. We will get some shortly.
Oh, good. Awesome.
They're amazing. But you better be committed to pumpkin. Like, you better want.
Right. Yeah, 50 pounds. That's a lot of
We mostly made pumpkin
You're
ice cream.
You share that with your neighbors, which is actually a nice idea.
Yeah.
God, I love that. People used to share all the time. I don't know how much people do that anymore. I mean, like, if a lady made a pie, she'd bring a pie over, you know? I mean, that's so great.
I'm picturing people laughing and me going down the street with a little red wagon with a giant green thing that looks like a banana pumpkin, you know? Trying to chop off pieces for them. I don't know if it's going to work on my street.
rabbit. Let's talk about rabbit.
Let's talk about you're doing all the things people are afraid to eat. Please talk about rabbit. I love to eat rabbit.
Oh, me too.
But I'm sort of joking because people sometimes are afraid because maybe they had it as a pet or something like that. Mm. The reality is, again, it's a farm-raised animal.
Yes.
It's a very mild flavored animal. And like pigeon, it requires a lot of skill to cook it well.
Well, and one of the things is that I really think braising the legs is the best way to go. Braising or confitting the legs. It's just the, you know, and then you can pull the loin off the length of the rib cage, and that's great for grilling or a quick saute. And I mean, those are small. They probably weigh maybe 3 ounces on a typical rabbit.
Those are great pasta garnish.
So good. Yeah. Yeah. Pasta, rice. But yeah, I mean, you're going to cook that in 3 or 4 minutes. So it's an easy dinner. And then meanwhile, you can on Sunday afternoon, you can braise or confit the legs. And I confit the legs either in butter or maybe butter and duck fat. But duck fat can become too strong for the flavor of the rabbit, so you need to, you know, mix it with the butter. And but confit them, marinate them lightly in salt, pepper, and maybe a little bit of fresh thyme or rosemary, very little, but because it doesn't need a lot. But you do want to cure it first and then go into your butter immersed and cook in a low oven about 225 degrees for probably 2 hours. And then you can store it in that fat and, you know, eat it when you like, but which is nice. I mean, you could do it on a Sunday and eat it Tuesday night easily. And you can heat it up gently in that butter as well. Or you can brown it a little bit in the pan too. You could get a little bit of color to it by heating it up that way. But that's great with pasta or gnocchi or noodles or rice or, you know, anything, any kind of starch or polenta. I love polenta. I love grits with rabbit as well. That sort of inherent sweetness in grits with a lot, or grit cakes. I like to make grit cakes with my rabbit. That way you have something that's crispy and on the outside and creamy on the inside. So there's a lot you can do with rabbit. Risotto is probably the best use of the legs, though.
Yeah, the risotto, well, I mean, I guess pasta is one of those things that always comes to my brain.
Mm-hmm.
Rabbit, if you braising is a little easier than confiting the legs. It doesn't give you the same delicate texture, but if the result you want in the end is to make a fricassee or fricassea with the rabbit meat from the legs, that is fantastic with tagliatelle and some kind of it, because it's so delicate. You need some kind of a bitter garnish, and also like the nuts you talked about could be pine nuts, could be walnuts, could be hazelnuts.
Mm-hmm.
Those are fantastic. I always want Alsace wine or wine from the Alto Adige, a Drage Wurstgemeiner or a big Alsace Riesling,
mm-hmm.
Or even one of the big Wachau Rieslings from Austria. Super bone dry, intense, very clean, but something to show off the sweetness and delicacy of the rabbit.
Rabbit's a great thing, and it's also lean, so you have to consider that when you are working with it, because it has, I mean, literally no fat at all.
Yeah, if you're going to make a fricassee, you need to get butter or use clarified butter to get it all crispy in the pan. That's one of those things that if you have the braised meat on the legs, you literally just like pick the meat off the legs, let it cool down. If you want that result and you want it to be nice flavor, let it cool down in that stock that you cook it in.
Pretty much any time you braise something, you want to let it cool down in its original cooking liquid. It's going to be so much better.
And then pull all that meat, get a heavy pan really hot. Get the fat in there nice and hot. Anything else you want to flavor that fat with, whether it's a little bit of shallot, which is almost always a good idea,
mm-hmm.
or again, sage, it's autumn, so that's kind of one of those things on the brain,
mm-hmm.
or even a little fresh thyme. Get that in and out of the pan before it burns up, but get some flavor in that oil and then add the meat from the rabbit and get it crispy in there.
So what other wine things are what's on your mind now for fall?
Bigger bodied champagne. You know, that's one of those things that
That's on my mind, too.
Yeah. No, but I mean, some of the houses that do lots of Pinot, you know, that's Bollinger, LaSalle, Paul Barra, smaller growers that do big-bodied stuff. Paul Barra is a house in Bouzy, B-O-U-Z-Y. I was talking to a table last night about Champagne and the different villages that are important and the houses that are important in the different villages. We know so many of the Grand Marc, the big labels, the big production houses that do good quality and have been consistent for a long time. We don't always connect with the individual farmers that grow small amounts of fruit, make small amount of wine, but that have very particular personalities that are often driven by where their holdings are. It's not champagne from all over the region, which is, you know, as time has gone on, that's been what's been the best marketed thing, maybe in beverage, in the history of beverage. But the individual, you know, there's a house like Guy Lamandier. He's a grower in Cramont. Cramont's a Grand Cru village, meaning it's one of the top quality villages, a dozen or so, in the Côte de Blanc. And that's all Chardonnay. And so usually when spring comes, I want Guy Lamandier.
Sure.
When fall comes, I want things from a village like Bouzy or Ay, where Bollinger is, or Dutz, you know, one of these guys that grow lots of big Pinot, something that has some of that greater breadth and the minerality is darker. And it will take on those fall flavors. But that's the other thing that's on the brain. The reds that I mentioned before, Pomerol or Barolo, those things are important. Big juicy Negramaro. If like on a budget, Negramaro from Puglia, that's really good quality. That stuff is great for this time of the year. I would still be looking for less expensive Bordeaux from 2009 if you can find it, because the vintage is historically great. And great in a lot of appellations that are not famous. And then Beaujolais comes. You know, that's the other thing that, you know, Nouveau Beaujolais comes, but...
And when does that happen?
The third Thursday in November is always the big celebration. Mm-hmm. But I would look for Cru Beaujolais, like Bruilly or Chirouble, Morgon, that kind of thing. So I guess we're going to have to stop the program and go get a glass of wine.
Sounds good. Seems like it's the day for it.
Well, thanks for listening to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
We'll see you next time.